AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with. Learn more at SimplotGrowerSolutions.com.
Still lots of volatility in grains markets as the May contracts roll into delivery in a tight cash market. While new crop corn and beans under a little bit of pressure, who wins this tug of war?
AgriTalk is... Excuse me. I meant to say... AgriTalk! Live from the Macaroon Cookie home stretch via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we handspring into a conversation with Karen Braun from Reuters. Right after the news, perspective from Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, filling in for Chip, the pride of Zahner Ag Hedge, Ted Seifert.
Hey, buddy, I just have a really big smile on my face right now because what you just did, I do that all the time, and it's like, you know, I feel silly when I do it, but sometimes even the professionals do it too. It's fantastic.
What have I done? What have I done?
Thank you. Don't do that, Davis.
Don't do that. Okay. No, you came in early, man. That's great. No, I do that all the time. Like I.
That's how I clear.
I miss my cues
out.
And I.
AgriTalk.
You know,
I gotta come clean on behalf of Davis. That was a big Apple Joe Stackler, big mistake. So it was not Davis. I pressed the wrong button.
It's because the drums didn't. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I do that more than you know. Like sometimes I'm going for this, and I hit this.
Well, that's so not noticeable. I mean,
it happens.
The wrong sound effect is nobody knows what sound effect you're playing in your head, man. I'm sure there's tons of them going through all day long.
So, AgriTalk is
AgriTalk. There it is.
I call it the Macaroon Cookie home stretch. Would you like to guess why, Ted Seifert? Macaroon Cookie home stretch.
Because when you're done with the show, you get to have macaroon cookies? No.
No chips in a macaroon cookie. No chip.
Oh.
In a macaroon cookie.
I
just want to hear his voice a little bit.
Well, he's back tomorrow, so...
He's back tomorrow.
You'll get some more of that coming tomorrow. That's patience, my friend. But first, we're going to do a show.
Here today, Yeah. What you got for us today?
Right. Well, as you mentioned, we're going to be talking to Karen Braun, Thomson Reuters. I'm really excited about that. She's one of my favorite guests to have on. We know she knows a whole lot about these markets, and man, it's just great to have somebody like that come on the show. So really looking forward to that. In the meantime, it is Thursday in a week that has been really wild and still kind of a wild day on Thursday. Maybe not as wild as some people were sort of expecting, because you know you had your May contracts, the limits came off, you know, so for a May corn contract that had hit limit 4 out of the last 5 trading sessions, you take that limit away, you think, oh boy, maybe we're going, you know, 50 higher or lower, or who knows. Well, it didn't do that. I mean, it still had a 22 cent range or whatever, 23 and a half cent range, but you know, it wasn't that big move. Either way, I mean, the volatility that we've seen this week has just been off the charts. And I think that's telling to some extent. I don't know. I think we'll know more once we have this May contract or these May contracts in the delivery period a little bit further. We see if we have deliveries or not. But, you know, next week's going to be an interesting week. I mean, it's going to be tough to follow this week, I suppose. So, woohoo. Yeah. Buckle your seatbelts, everybody.
Amen, brother. Well said.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, buddy, what do you got for news?
Well, Ted, export sales of wheat in the week ended April 22 were in line with trade expectations. Old crop wheat sales totaled 223,000 metric tons in the week ended April 22, that was. New crop sales, 237,000 metric tons. Mexico was the top buyer there. July hard red winter wheat, 2 cents lower, 694.5. July soft red up 6.25 cents to 729. September spring wheat, 10.5 cents higher, 749.25. Man, Ted, the wheat markets between the three flavors that we listed here were all over the place. We got lower, we got moderately higher, we got decently higher. And then throw in Mexico, the top buyer of wheat. I don't know if I've ever said that before.
Yeah, right. That's and I wonder if that's saying something about Mexico's weather conditions. It's a little bit troublesome or worrisome for corn. I feel like Kansas City was the stick in the mud, but if you look at Chicago wheat, that was really kind of, I think, the spark for corn to some extent too. So, okay. Yes, wild day indeed.
Well, the vertical rally in corn futures since March 31 pushed prices too far, too fast, according to some. New longs are more nervous as stalling momentum has encouraged profit-taking on rallies. Weekly corn export sales of 521,000 metric tons of old crop were up 35% from the prior week, but down 8% from the four-week average. Traders had expected 400,000 metric tons to about 1 million metric tons. So we came well shy of that 1 million metric tons. New crop sales, 553,400 metric tons, near the upper end of trade expectations. No new grain sales reported for China. July corn futures, 4 1/4 cents higher, 648 1/4. Sept down a penny, 570.5. December corn closed at 546 1/4, down just 0.25 cents today, Ted.
Yeah, it really came off its lows very well. But a lot of that strength's being led by the May contract, which again goes into first notice day tomorrow. 15 3/4 cents higher. It tells you a lot about how tight the cash market is right now. Apparently, you're going to have commercials looking to take delivery. So, buckle up. Should be an interesting day.
November soybean futures were pressured by beneficial U.S. weather forecasts that may provide good planting opportunities the next 2 weeks. Weekly export sales of old crop beans for the weekend of April 22 were up noticeably from the four-week average at 292,500 metric tons. New crop sales, 439,000 metric ton, led by sales to China and unknown destinations last week. July bean futures, 11 1/2 cents lower, 15.02 1/4. August beans fell 12.5 to 14.43 1/4. November beans closed at 13.18 3/4, down 9 1/4 cents on the day, Ted.
Yeah, so just as much as the May futures were higher today, the May corn futures were higher today, the May bean futures were down. And this is the market that we've been told is, you know, really razor thin tight. So kind of an interesting thing happening there for all of the May contracts going into delivery. And again, look at the pressure in the new crop beans. That's kind of interesting too. So, I keep
like
saying
we've got
it.
Oliver but, standing by. Let's hop over and see what Oliver makes of it all. What do you say?
Yes, let's do that. Hey, Oliver, how's it going today, buddy?
It's going good. That's a lot of pressure to try to make something of these markets the way that they've been trading here throughout the week.
Give us your best shot, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, corn in 54-cent range, beans in the 84-cent range. I think we probably see that volatility shrivel up a little bit, potentially some profit-taking to wrap up the month and maybe squeeze some new longs out of the market to start next week and suck some shorts back in. But ultimately, I wouldn't be surprised to see the market kind of rip the face off again to the upside. The funds have the powder to add to it. We've seen what they can do when they flex their muscles here, especially with producers and commercials near record net short on the other side. So I think the volatility is going to continue. And on top of that, you throw in the fact that we're going to see the daily limits expanded next week as well. So I think things will stay interesting for the time being. But hopefully we can start to come into a little bit more normal of a market, because what we saw between Tuesday and Wednesday was far from normal and not true price discovery.
What is normal anymore, buddy?
That's a good question. But I know when you trade limit down at 8 p.m. Central time and then rally all the way back and trade up 20 cents, that's not good for anybody, producers or end users. So something needs to change.
I am with you. Thank you for that color commentary there, Oliver. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your day. Everybody else, we're going to be talking to Karen Braun from Thomson Reuters. So come on back to AgriTalk.
Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bio products made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifried, filling in for Chip Flurry here on a Thursday. And our guest is Karen Braun of Thomson Reuters. I say it every time. If you guys aren't following her on Twitter, you should be, because she puts out some of the best information. Also, all the news she puts out for Thomson Reuters is really fantastic. She goes a lot more in depth on things. I read a lot of it, and it's really fantastic. So I'm really happy and excited to have her on as a guest. And Karen, I've got kind of a personal question to start off with. You know, as a broker and a trader, you know, I know what markets like these feel like. But as an analyst, do you enjoy when things are really volatile and kind of crazy, or do you prefer markets that are a lot more organized and kind of going all the same direction?
That's an interesting question. You know, I actually, in the last couple of years, we've had some pretty unprecedented things happen in these markets. And
yeah,
I was thinking back to 2017. Which was my second full year doing this and writing columns for Reuters. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think, you know, before the trade war, before, you know, the planting problems in 2019, before COVID, and then, you know, the crazy stuff that's happened in 2020 and ever since,
yeah,
all the China, you know, corn purchases, all those things, what was I talking about back then?
Right.
What was anyone talking about back then?
What was it even like? I don't remember.
Gosh, I really can't even remember. but that's the point. I mean, you know, when you ask those questions, like, you know, I don't want anybody, you know, to be put in a tough spot. And I know that people trading these markets, you know, it's really tough when times get these volatile and you know, mm-hmm, like things get just off the charts, unprecedented, and we don't have anything to look back at. Mm-hmm. And so people get really nervous, and you know, there's a lot of money on the line, and so I don't like to see people, you know, super nervous or in a bad spot, but it definitely gives me more to kind of go back to in the past and try to look for some clues and look for some trends in data and maybe sort of put some context into some of the things that are happening. And like I said, sometimes there hasn't been any context in recent months.
Yeah, right.
At least historical context, that is, right?
I think you could say that about the last couple of years. I think you just did say that, you know, about the last couple of years. It's
right.
Been
exactly
really a whole lot of unprecedented, you know, some of them black swans, some of them have been actually really good things for the markets. And yeah, it's just no lack of news recently. So I'm assuming for you, yeah, that makes it more interesting to write about and to go and find those things. Because when things are really quiet, it's just kind of like, okay, well, you know, there's not much to say. So having to write about things on a regular basis, this is kind of good. So I guess what's the biggest topic that you have right now that you find interesting?
Oh, man. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. How much time do we have?
Yeah.
Well, so actually just today I wrote a little piece up about the corn export pace to China out of the U.S. And it's just a little bit slow, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm, we definitely have the capacity to increase. Mm-hmm. It's not like we really have to increase our weekly shipments by that much. It's really just a couple of cargoes each week. But,
okay,
you know, as that August 31st deadline approaches, you know, we just have less and less time to do it. And so I think that as we move kind of towards that deadline, if we don't start seeing the corn shipments to China actually increase. We start seeing these volumes go out because we've actually shipped less than half of what they've bought so far for this marketing year. And so I think that as we get towards that August deadline and we don't see the volumes that we need to see, I do think that the market's going to start to get a little bit worried. And I did compare that to what's happened in soybeans, where we have seen soybeans rally also, but you know, the gains have been definitely not as strong as those for corn. And I think part of that has to do with maybe some doubts about Chinese demand and their intentions for next year and the African swine fever reports that we keep getting. So that could creep into the corn market, I think, if we don't see this corn going out, or especially if we see anything kind of rolled to the next year or even canceled.
So a couple of things to unpack there. But first, why do you think it is that the shipment pace to China has been so slow? Is that on our end, or is that China just not needing it right away?
I'm really not completely sure. I mean, obviously, back when we're shipping soybeans, really October through January, February, we just don't really book those soybean shipments for those corn shipments for those times, because we're focusing on soybeans, and that's really what we're doing. So so it's very normal for the corn shipments to pick up this time of year, and they have. I mean, the shipments have been really, really big, and they have been big to China, but just not the kind of big that maybe we thought it would be. And so I don't really know exactly right now if that is just a factor of when did they purchase the corn for, or obviously as time goes on and if this keeps happening, then we're really going to start to wonder, do they really need all of this corn, or do they plan to take all of this corn? Especially, will they continue this buying pace into the next marketing year, which I think a lot of the strength in the markets right now is based on this huge Chinese feed demand that we've never seen before.
And the anticipation that it will be there for next year. But you do wonder with the price structure on the board, if you look at December corn trading, a dollar below the July, $1.20 or $1.02 below the July, would they roll that into new crop for the lower price? I mean, if they don't need it right now, if there isn't that sense of urgency, is that a possibility? And if that were to happen, what does that do to the markets?
Yeah, I'm actually not sure because, again, I'm not certain why the corn isn't going out right now. So I don't really know that they don't need it right now. But I think, to my point earlier, if this trend continues, then we might start to think, they might not need it, and they're not going to care about really rolling the purchases or anything. That's just going to become less important to them. But everything in China still indicates that they are short of supplies. They do need the corn. Just jumping back to soybeans really quickly, and I was looking at this earlier, but so on the one end, China actually has a decent amount of soybeans purchased for 21-22 out of the U.S. I think it's about 3 million tons, and we've got unknown 2.5 million, and that's quite a bit more than normal for this time of year. And China's March imports were record large, and that was lots of stuff from Brazil and from the U.S. But if you look at their soybean stocks, they are still falling. So I don't know if those are if those stocks were going into reserves, because these are the port stocks. These are the stocks that, they crush at the ports and then they ship off,
It's not necessarily everything they have, right? So yes, exactly.
But that is an interesting trend, because if you had seen the soybean stocks, really increasing historically, that would, versus historical maximums, you would think, well, I don't know, is China going to be interested in beans, in the fall? But that does suggest, they actually still need those beans to show up there.
Yeah. It also makes you really wonder what they're doing with the beans. Is their demand that strong for the crush? Or, I mean, keep in mind the USDA just lowered their crush because of ASF. Or are they stockpiling beans? And you guys have heard me say it before. I wonder if they're planning on some aggressive things with Taiwan and the South China Sea, and they're worried about the rest of the world not doing business with them. So therefore, they feel like they need to have a big supply. But it's interesting, like you said, and to your point here, the trade, I think, has kind of doubted next year's soybean demand. And part of that might be because of the big crop from South America that, you know, we just saw. And corn's a different story because they're having problems currently with that. Right. But the trade hasn't seemed to doubt corn demand yet. So you think if China you think the catalyst for that or the tipping point for that might be if China doesn't pick up on the pace of receiving U.S. exports of corn?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely, especially in the next month or two, if we haven't seen this pace, you know, increase, stay up, and then, you know, if we see anything like rolling or even canceling, obviously, I think that's going to be a huge red flag right away. And of course, that's going to tie into whatever's going on, you know, with the U.S. crop at the time. But I do think that this has been a really, really huge you know, bullish factor. And I think that without that, it's going to make it tough.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. So we've got a lot more work to do here. We're just getting started, everybody. Karen is our guest here today. She's fantastic. In the meantime, everybody, come on back to AgriTalk.
Farming in the 21st century requires data-driven technology and product decisions that are rooted in on-the-ground insights. At Simplot Grower Solutions, we're in your fields and by your side to help you grow yields and profits. Simplot is a pioneer and innovator in plant nutrition and agronomic science. Our local experts offer grounded advice to help you get the most out of every acre. Go to SimplotGrowerSolutions.com to see how we can be your one-stop resource. Simplot Grower Solutions, a partner you can grow with.
It's time for Pro Farmer Headlines with Davis Michelson. Davis, what's the news that matters most today?
Well, Ted, CME Group announced another hike to margins on corn and wheat futures. The new rates will take effect after the close of business today. Dredging on Argentina's Paraná River will continue another 90 days. The European Commission cut its forecast for common wheat crop production in 2021 and 22. Joe Biden made his case for big government in a 67-minute address to a joint session of Congress last night. His Capital Gains Reform Act includes exclusions for family farms. And one of Biden's proposals would abolish 1031 exchanges on real estate profits of more than $500,000. China announces new ASF outbreak. Hey, hey, Pro Farmer members had this information before the day session ever even began. You can too. Just go to tryprofarmer.com for a free trial. Let's try profarmer.com.
Do it.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifert. I'm from Zahner Ag Hedge here filling in for Chip Flory on a Thursday. I see the sun finally peeking out here today, and hopefully everybody's getting some work done today. So, yes, we've been having a conversation with Karen Braun of Thomson Reuters. We've got a lot more that we want to cover. Before we do that, though, let's go back to Davis Michelson. Man, I butchered your name there. Davis Michelson, Mr. Handsome Newsman. Sorry about that, buddy. Go for it.
No, you did fine. July hard red winter wheat today, 2 cents lower, 694.5. September spring wheat, 10.5 cents higher, 749.25. Go figure. July corn futures, 4.25 cents higher, 648.25. December corn closed at 546.25. That's down a whole quarter of a cent today. July soybean futures, 11.5 cents lower, 1502.25. November bean futures closed at 1318.75, down 9.25 cents on the day. We didn't get to these before, so let's get them in full. July cotton, well, yeah, careful what you wish for here. July cotton down 297 points, Ted, 86.55 at the close. Dease cotton down 232, 83.75. Let's check the livestocks. Mm-hmm. Fat cattle futures benefited from thoughts consumer demand for beef will remain strong, but pressure on futures and ample market-ready supplies have largely outweighed the bullish demand story in the cash market. Yeah. June live cattle, 60 cents higher, 116.05. October, up 50 cents, 121.55. And August feeders gained 97.5 cents to 149.87.5. And finally, on the snout side, lean hog futures were sharply lower on disappointing cash and cutout values, despite weekly export sales reaching a marketing year high of 58,800 metric tons. June lean hogs down $1.40, 106.72.5. August hogs down $1.25, 102.67.5. Ted, despite export sales reaching a marketing year high.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. Nothing makes sense anymore. Hold me. Ted.
Shipment. Oh, hey, my pleasure, buddy. No, don't threaten me with a good time. Anywho, no. My quick 2 cents on livestock.
Yes.
Yeah, and by the way, marketing year high shipments in pork. Sales were good, but you know. Anyways.
Okay. Yep.
Hogs, you know, they held resistance and pulled back. Cattle, they held support and bounced up. Today was a technical trade day for the most part, and we'll see what happens here tomorrow. But it looks to me like cattle want to try to go higher, and I think hogs still want to go higher as well. We shall see. All right.
I feel better. That's the best I can do from here.
You know,
I feel better. Thank you.
We're trying. Absolutely. All right. So let's get back to our conversation with Karen Braun. We've talked a lot about exports and China in particular. But, you know, there's something that's been going on, and it's sort of in the highlight of the week, and I just wanted to touch on it briefly. But here today, I mean, May corn was up 15.75 cents. That contract, that May contract, and even that May July spread has been just going bonkers the last couple of days as May gets ready to go into delivery. And then you've got May soybeans going the opposite direction, which is kind of strange because that's really what we've talked about, you know, how tight the soybean market is, yet it's the corn that's really gaining when we get into delivery. So, Karen, what are you seeing on the cash market side of things? You know, is this really tight cash market going to keep these front months up? In July, corn, for example, which is trading, you know, almost 50 cents below May, is there any reason to believe that we're not going to do the same thing when we get to that July contract expiration?
Yeah, you know, I'm reading here the Reuters poll of analysts for deliveries tomorrow into May, soybeans, corn, wheat. And yeah, I mean, there's pretty much nothing expected there. I guess the hard red winter wheat, maybe some expected, and some of the other winter wheat, just a little bit. But I think this does speak to, just like you said, how tight the cash market is. And I think that this has, caught a lot of people off guard. You know, especially this action in the spread, you know, May to July, and it's been historic, this move that we've seen in the last really 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm, and we're kind of rivaling 2013, actually, around the same time. And, you know, that spread really went crazy kind of, you know, into the May expiration. And, you know, there were no deliveries, you know, at that time. The cash market was really tight. We had some limit moves in corn on, you know, non-report days at the end of April in 2013. So a lot of similar stuff going on. So I would kind of expect. This potentially to continue, at least with the old crop. You know, of course, USDA will show us some new stock information on June 30th. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen there.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, things do look pretty tight. And I think that, you know, what we've seen in the spread this week, you know, really tells that story.
Reflect that. And yeah, I mean, it's screaming tight. So I wonder if the USDA is going to have to tighten the carryover for old crops, or at least that's the perception of the May contract anyways. But let's also talk about Brazil, because I think that's part of the reason that we're seeing some strength in the old crop contracts. What's going on weather down there? Has the outlook gotten any better? What's your analysis on that?
Yeah, I don't think things are looking too good in southern Brazil, specifically in Paraná, which is the second largest, corn producer.
Right.
Soybean and corn producer and second crop corn producer. And, you know, it's a really important state for their corn exports. So they've just been so dry. They planted really late. They planted into dry soils, and it's been really, really dry. I mean, I think April is going to be potentially a record dry month. And that does compare back to 2018. So 3 years ago, we had that bad drought in Argentina and southern Brazil. And so the crop also in Paraná in southern Brazil was really, really poor that year. And our rainfall is actually a little worse than that this year so far. And their crop is kind of moving through those pollination stages right now, moving into Greenville. And it's the worst time really to be getting, you know, the dry weather. And so it's really not looking great down there. But other parts of the country, I mean, Mato Grosso, you know, is doing okay. And I think that's going to be the difference between a year like, you know, this year and 2018, where, you know, things were really more widespread poor in 2018. Whereas this year, it's really sort of concentrated for now. But again, their harvest doesn't really start until, you know, July-ish. So yeah, I mean, there's still a little bit of time for that to change. But it really doesn't look good in kind of those southern areas.
So given the forecast that we have right now, how much do you think the overall Brazilian corn production could drop?
Oh, man. So I think USDA and, you know, I think CONAB, the official Brazil's statistics agency, you know, they're USDA. Right. I believe they're both at 109 million tons.
Yeah, 109.
If I'm not mistaken. I've seen some estimates drop down to the 104, 105 range. I've also seen some people talking about that sub 100, and that's for the total corn crop.
Right.
First, second, and a little bit of third. So I've seen people kind of throwing around that sub 100 number. I don't think the market is there yet, and I think it's too early to say that. But I think that, you know, with the forecast here, it does not look you know, very wet in the next 2 weeks at least, and in those southern areas. So, you know, I guess I wouldn't rule out that sub 100 number, but 109 is probably too much.
Yeah. Okay. I would agree with that. Now, you know, corn has really gained, and you mentioned this earlier, but corn has really gained on soybeans here in the last couple of months, but specifically in the last few weeks. I would say Brazil's maybe part of that, but is this also the market asking for more corn acres here just last minute? And do you think that'll work?
It definitely seems to be. And, you know, I've done analysis on the past of how do we, you know, get corn acres. You know, from the March intentions report, you know, how do we lose or gain acres? There's really no example in corn or soybeans where prices really significantly moved the needle. Now, the exception is last year when COVID kind of kicked off in mid-March and, you know, corn prices really, really plunged. So that did take away some acres, but there's really no other situation. Even when beans rally against corn, when you know, beans fall against corn, there's really not a good correlation to that. But now, you know, like we've mentioned off the top, we're in a totally unprecedented situation. I mean, we've never seen December corn rally this much in the spring.
In this time,
it is by far the most it's ever rallied. So I don't think you can rule out that we've actually maybe bought some acres of corn. On the other hand, soybeans, we're really not doing anything to encourage, you know, a lot of additional acres of soybeans.
Right. Which is interesting because, as we were talking about before, I mean, maybe the trade is wrong by doubting new crop soybean demand. Either way, this will be a very interesting story to play out. I'm going to say, you know, I think maybe 2 years ago, we might have bought some acreage, but it wasn't the market that was doing it. It was the MPP payments that got announced right at sort of the end of June, and we ended up throwing in another 10 million acres of corn just so we made sure we got those payments.
Yep.
But it's really hard to compare apples to oranges like that. So,
exactly.
So I guess my question, though, is, you know, we saw the planting intentions numbers. We saw what the analysts were guessing going into that report. Where do you think we can end up for acres?
Oh boy, that's a pretty tough question. let me start with June. So in terms of the June numbers, farmers usually tend to tell USDA something more than what they said in March for corn and soybeans. And the only times they don't is when there's really bad weather, and then also COVID last year in the case of corn. But really, unless the weather is really bad, you just don't see fewer corn and soybean acres in June. So I think we could see a bump, but I don't know if it's going to be as much as the market wants.
Okay. Wonderful. Karen, as always, your insights are so very much appreciated. You are one of the sharpest tools in the shed. Thank you very much for being my guest today. Again, always appreciate that. Everybody else, we are going to be coming back. I'll be wrapping up my final thoughts, and it sounds like we have a good announcement, so come back.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifried. I'm from Zener Ag Hedge in Chicago. And yes, woohoo.
Ted,
yeah, buddy.
Go for it. I got to hop in here. Something very exciting has happened.
I'm excited.
Tomorrow morning, of course, we've got the Friday free-for-all, as we do every Friday morning. Earlier this week, I started to drop some hints about a giant, enormous guest that we were hoping to get for the Friday free-for-all. Even the incomparable Ty Morgan mentioned it this morning on the show. Big Apple Joe Stackler confirmed some very exciting news for us. Joe, come on in here.
Hello.
Tell us about who'd you lock in for us tomorrow morning for the Friday free-for-all?
Well, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack will join us. And there's a lot of questions people have, and he is ready, willing, and able to answer those questions. We're going to be talking about a lot of the issues, 30 by 30, step up, inheritance, et cetera.
Man.
Also what they're doing about or hope to do about the supply chain issues. So it's going to be...
That's, by the way, first of all, excellent work. Big up,
yeah, wow.
Joe, everybody. So
wow.
Proud of you, buddy. Good work. Is it sort of an in and out thing? He's here for one segment and then he's gone. Is he going to participate in the free for all? What's the setup here?
It is going to be, because it's Friday, it is the Friday free for all, but it is going to be for one segment. We've been working on having him on for a segment anytime during the week, or what it might have been next week. But as it turns out, Friday was when the schedules were aligning, and it happens to be on Friday during the free-for-all. But
that's terrific.
It's actually, it couldn't be a better day for it because we talk about policy, and so there we go.
Right. That's tomorrow morning's show, 10 a.m. Central Time, wherever you get your favorite podcasts here on the AgriTalk app.
Wow.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I can't believe it. I'm stunned. We got him.
Stunned. That's just wow. Like, how do I follow that? Thanks. You couldn't have saved that to the end of the show, huh?
Well, hey, I got a question for you. I know you want to rant a little bit. Maybe I can get you started here. But see, Karen.
Yeah.
Karen has got it in her head that maybe corn bought some acres.
Yeah.
And I could see with the, you know, the price and everything and all that sort of stuff. She did mention it's unprecedented, but so is the price move at this point seasonally. I got to go back to the inputs. If I'm thinking, oh, gee, I'm going to plant it just doesn't pencil out. Because if you're just now adding corn acres, you have not obviously pre-booked your nitrogen.
Right.
And if you're booking it now, ouch.
You're buying into the... A very, yeah, right, exactly right. Well, also, it's not just easy to, you know, flip a switch, right? I mean, maybe you can do that on a few acres, but it's, you know, I ask guys, you know what, just keep going on corn. It's like, well, yeah, except for, you know, there's a whole bunch of treatment. And I mean, I just can't really do that. And I think a lot of these decisions have been made when everybody was so enthusiastic about, oh boy, that soybean balance sheet is going to be even tighter next year. Beans are going to go to record high prices and so on and so forth. So this effort by the corn market, while it is extremely valiant and as Karen said, unprecedented to see this sort of strength in corn at this time of year, I don't know if it really does a whole lot to the acreage mix. Now, I will say that good prices overall will mean we're going to try to max out the acreage. And I think it is very easy for me to say, and for other analysts to say that, you know, the intentions report was too soft.
Yes.
It wasn't strong enough were.
And she brought that up too. I was going to mention that as well. I think she is very, very correct on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, I think the only thing that would have stopped us from not beating those numbers, and again, it all remains to be seen. So, you know, this is all speculation. But
sure.
In my mind, what would have stopped us from that would be a really terrible growing season. And we certainly had some fears about that for a few days. But I think now, looking at the longer range forecasts, yeah, we're going to get some rain, but, you know, some heat's coming back. The heat coming back is a good thing. I think I can pretty comfortably say we're going to get the corn crop planted. We're going to get the bean crop planted. We're going to do it enthusiastically. I'll go as far as to say that I think the 3 or 4 days of delays that we had early on and all the fanfare or all the talk that the market was giving, and oh, wow, this is going to, you know, push back planting. Are we going to get the acres in? That created a sense of urgency. And that urgency has translated into guys going really hard on planting over the last few days. I think we're going to not only close the gap of how much we were behind in planting in corn, which is only 3% as of, you know, Sunday night, we're going to be ahead of pace. I really firmly think that we're going to be ahead of pace, but when we see that report on Monday
and
afternoon.
I'm not hearing anybody talking about prevent plant acres, and maybe,
right.
Maybe it's, I don't know, but I remember years not too long ago when we were talking about ice jams and humongous right. floods and, you know, river towns just underwater.
Right.
I didn't hear any reports of that this year, and we're past that season now. We're thawed, baby. We're thawed.
Yeah, we are thawed, baby. Also, acreage isn't the silver bullet, though, right? I mean, that's sort of the important thing to note here is that, you know, yeah, we'll probably get a little bit more corn and bean acres. It might not be as much as the trade's really expecting, but we're probably going to get a little bit more corn and bean acres. But that doesn't fix next year's balance sheets. We're also going to need to see at least trend line yields, but probably better than 2 to 4 bushel an acre better in corn and 1 to 3 bushel better for soybeans in order to support the demand that we're seeing out there. Unless that demand isn't there, man, this could be a very spicy growing season with any sort of weather market that we have at all. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting stuff. You got me fired up now, Ted.
Fired up, man.
Woo.
Yeah, buddy. Well, that's good. That's good timing too, because you know, it's Friday tomorrow, and Friday's a great day to be fired up. And
you gonna drop her in neutral and just coast into the weekend? Is that how it goes in Seifert's world?
It doesn't work that way with markets like this. No,
okay.
Not at all. No. Ted will be fully engaged until about 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. At that time, there will be lots of neutral drops happening. Absolutely.
There we go.
Yeah,
there
buddy. Yes, right. I'm actually looking at another new car.
Yeah,
we can talk about that another time. We're running out of time. Listen, guys, tomorrow is a big day for AgriTalk. The morning show will be fantastic. Chip is back. Yes. Chip is back tomorrow afternoon with Bill Biederman. In the meantime, Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge. I've had a wonderful time. Hopefully you guys had too. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your Thursday.